Welcome to Season 2 of The Maker Mentality. This season, we are going to be focusing on creativity. If you want to find more information, you can always check out my website, thenerdyteacher.com, or find me on Twitter or Instagram at thenerdyteacher.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Maker Mentality. I'm really excited to have another guest on to talk about creativity. I've got Jamie Cassip here. Jamie, do you want to say hi to everyone?
Hey, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Great. Now, what's your official title?
So my official title is I'm the Education Evangelist at Google.
Excellent. That's a nice title. Did you come up with that title yourself?
No, actually, it was given to me by, at the time, he was the tech director for the state of Michigan for the Department of Education. And I was like, you know, education manager or, you know, whatever the title was. And he saw me present and I got off the stage and he said, you're not whatever title it was. He's like, you're an evangelist. And that's what you should. And that's where the title came from. And, you know, it fits into the technology culture where we have lots of evangelists working at different companies. So it all fit in nicely. And that's where it came from.
That's awesome. See, I love doing this podcast. I learn little things like this. It's just great. I'm excited to have you on, Jamie, because we've been talking about creativity. And I feel like I've known you, of you, seen you speak for a number of years. And recently I started a YouTube channel sharing some amazing things. We'll circle back about that. But the first question I ask everyone is, did you grow up feeling like you were a creative person, yes or no? And if not, why? Or if so, did someone support you in that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because usually the question is, are you a creative person versus did you grow up thinking you were a creative person? I think that's a much better way to frame that question. And so I would say yes. I always felt like I was a creative person, whether it was, you know, the way I played basketball in high school or my drawings or taking pictures and photography. I always felt creative. But I also felt out of place by thinking I was creative, because most people you talk to will say they're not creative or I'm not a very creative person. And I remember later in my career, I read this great book called Orbiting the Giant Hairball by Gordon McKinsey, one of my favorite business books. He's passed away. I think he only wrote this one book. But it was about creativity. And in the book, he talks about how he would go visit schools and he would walk into first grade and kindergarten students. He was a metal sculptist. And he'd say, among many things, I'm a metal sculptist. So I'm an artist. How many artists do we have in the room? And every kid in the class would raise their hand. And in third grade, half the kids would raise their hand. And by the time he got to sixth grade, maybe one or two kids would raise their hand. So he asked this real fundamental question, which is, are we born creative and then we lose it by the time we get to sixth grade? Or does something happen to us, both in education and in society, that makes us feel like we're not creative? In other words, his kind of hypothesis is that everyone is creative. It's just a question of whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, and part of that creativity also stems from the culture that you're in that values what you're creative in. Right. When you say creativity, some people automatically just assume it means drawing. Are you creative? Oh, you can or can't draw. But that doesn't mean you can't write lyrics, or that doesn't mean that you're not a potter. It doesn't mean that you're not someone that just loves designing clothes, or like there are so many different avenues for creativity. I think it's the narrow view of creativity that I think hurts kids in the long run, because in schools you have art class and there you go.
That's your creativity. No, and I'm glad I'm joining you for this topic, because I recently started like pitching kind of what are my five skills that kids need in the future of work, right? With what's coming in the next 10, 20, 30 years in terms of what you're going to need to be able to do. And on that list are some things that everyone knows, which is, and I try to narrow it down to just these five things that are all interconnected, right? So it's problem solving, collaboration, the ability to learn is another one. But the last one on that list is creativity. And I think, I mean, it's when you try to just narrow it down to five things, creativity is one of the most important ones, given the future that we face. With the amount of information that's coming at us, with the amount of information that's out there, everyone has access to that information. Everyone has access to the same stuff. So it really comes down to what do you do with that information? How do you convert that information into intelligence? How do you tell your story? How do you pitch something? And all that, to your point, is creativity, right? It has nothing to do with what you're going to draw. It's how are you going to present your material? How are you going to present your content? How are you going to present your ideas in creative and unique ways?
So why do you think, now you've had the opportunity to visit schools all across the country in all different settings. Why do you think schools are either hesitant or slow to move away from this industrial model of teaching that is not very creative, it doesn't support the arts, to a model that is very much art supportive or recognizes the value of creativity?
Yeah, I think it, I mean, it's complex and simple at the same time. And what I mean by that, the simplest way to think about it is what gets measured gets done, right? And that's true about anything. Whatever it is that you measure is the thing that you get done. And that's true whether it's your kid and their chores and what you assign them, or in a professional setting at work in terms of what your goals and expectations are for the year. And in school, what are we measuring? What are the things that we know? What are the things that we're using to tell whether we're doing well or not? And right now, the things that we're measuring are things like standardized test scores, or we're, you know, measuring attendance, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever those things are that we're measuring might be the wrong things to measure. And maybe if we measure some of these things, like, for example, one of the questions or one of the things that happens to me, I get to travel all over the world and I get to meet lots of interesting people. And I can't tell you how many times someone will come up to me at some point at a conference or an event and they'll say, hey, you have to check out this school. This is a very successful X, right? The school somewhere in the world. And the first question I ask is, how are you defining success? What does that mean? Like, it's a successful school, how? What is the success metric? And they'll say things like, oh, they get really high math scores, or they get really high test scores, or, you know, 99% of them get high SAT scores, you know, whatever that metric is, and that's what we're measuring. And I want to, you know, what the question I want to answer is, how happy are the kids, right? And I think there's conditions for creativity and being at ease and being happy and smiling are things of the environments that help you create stuff, right? And that environment makes sense, right? So we often talk, there's a new book that I just started reading called Joyful. I don't know if you heard of it. And it was an interesting insight into how we create our spaces and how our spaces lead to creativity. And so, and, you know, if you can peek into my office, and I need to shoot some video of what my office looks like at some point. To me, this is a creative space, right? This is where I can think. This is where I can process. This is where I can do things. If I was in a stale environment where everything was, you know, white walls and plain, I might not be as creative. So I think all these facts, like how are we measuring things is the most important thing. What is it that we're measuring? Are we measuring the right things? And I think once we have those conversations, we'll start looking at things like collaboration and problem solving and creativity as things that we can actually measure. And just because they're hard to measure doesn't mean that we shouldn't try.
Well, and I think those are all like amazing points. And I think, you know, a part of it, you're looking at this educational system, this huge behemoth of just old school processes being run by people that kind of like it the way that it is. It puts a lot of money in a lot of pockets for testing and things like that. And I think one of the problems is, and you know, you feel this as a teacher, something I felt at my previous job was I need to, like you said, I need to hit X, Y, and Z because that's what's on the test. Whether it makes the kids happy or not, I do my best to try to make it engaging and entertaining. But that's what's going to be on the test. And it can be really frustrating. And, you know, one of the things that at my current school that I'm really proud of is that a number of years ago, they got rid of all AP classes. They said, we are not teaching to a test. Like, that is not what life is. And they introduced this essentially 4-year-long research program that ends with a capstone project for every senior. And they get to choose whatever topic they want to explore, and they do research, and they create an artifact, and they do a presentation to the entire community. It's this just amazing thing where now, working in my makerspace, I get to work with these seniors that are coming in saying, okay, So I'm exploring near-death experiences and the neuroscience behind that, and I want to use VR to create like a near-death experience. And I'm like, right. Sweet, let's do that. And the excitement on her face, and she's like, I get to do coding, and I get to create all of this. Like, that's like you said, how much joy is there? And these are kids that are so joyful to be able to work and explore things that are, you know, meaningful to them, and add that creativity element because they feel comfortable with the environment created at the school that anyone can create. Everyone's open to it. Like, just go for it.
Right. There's nothing more terrifying and more exciting than a white piece of paper.
Yes.
Right. Those, you know, lots of us who are in the creative space, you know, attack that white piece of paper in different ways. Some of us wait for the last minute. Some of us plan ahead. But that white piece of paper is so exciting and so terrifying at the same time. And how do we create environments where students are learning how to manage that? And by the way, I'm not one of those education reformers or advocates that talks about education being broken or how it hasn't changed in 150 years. And I'm clear about that. And I say that a lot in my presentations because I can't say it's broken. It worked for me, right? I'm a product of a single mother growing up in Hell's Kitchen, New York. Education is the reason I'm talking to you today. And so it worked for me. And by the way, it has worked for millions and millions and millions of people. We were able to create a superpower of a nation on how we took education seriously in this country for the last 150 years. So I'm not saying that we need to go fix anything. I'm not saying that the education system is broken. What I'm trying to get everyone to think about is what does the future look like? And how do we take the best ideas that we have about what education really needs to look like for that future and make that a reality, right? It's this idea that it's not about fixing something that's broken. It's about understanding that it served us well for a very long time. And now it's a calling. And what we need to do in education is what our forefathers in education did 150 years ago and ask ourselves, what's the right model for the future we face?
Yeah, and I think it's all about evolution, right? Like evolving.
Yeah.
You know, towards new things. I mean, it can be frustrating when you're working with teachers who are at a school that's deemed high performing or successful. And they go, well, look at my test scores. Why do I have to change? And that's a hard conversation to have. But it's like you said,
right. Well,
what are we measuring? Like, is that, you know, the mark that we want to set for our kids? And like I said, for those kids that have just been, they're a dancer. And they're sitting there struggling through, you know, calculus 1 and 2. And they're like, I just want to dance. Like, why can't I dance?
Right.
And the loss of the trade schools really breaks my heart, too. Like all of these kids that should have this opportunity to start being an apprentice and show some creativity and flair in working in auto repair and engines. And like, we need people creative in all of these fields because that's where we get innovation. That's where we get solutions to problems we don't even quite see our problems yet.
That's such an issue. You know, I don't know who I stole this from. I don't know if it was someone who I saw present or a comedian, but this idea that, you know, if you put yourself in a time capsule, if you went into a time machine and went back 200 years and you showed up just with the clothes you were wearing and you came across people from 200 years ago and you're like, oh my God, the future is amazing. We're going to have like electricity and technology and this kind of medicine. And those people look at you and say, cool, how do we do that? How does an engine work? And you're like, I have no idea. I don't actually know how to do anything. I just know it's there, right? Like that's sad, right? So I think everyone should know how to do something. I think it's that should be a metric, right? The metric should be, if you're gonna go in a time machine 200 years back, what are you bringing with you? What skill are you bringing with you?
You're right. I mean, it's you can tell someone, oh, you can go onto this little box and type in any question you can think of, and you'll get a million answers. Create that box. Well, it works. All I do is turn it on. Like that's
right. Yeah. How do you build that? What do you do? I mean, something as simple as a car engine, right? Like, wait, what? You can. Well, how does gas work? I have no idea.
It's funny, but you know, it's great though. I mean, you have that type of mentality you want to approach kids with, right? Like, what is it you want to learn? Like, what is that thing that has always interested you? And like, when I did Genius Hour 20 times in my classroom, it was that simple question. Like, what do you want to learn? Let's spend some time learning it. And no surprise, I had like full engagement from all of my kids, the kids that were deemed struggling learners, whatever that exactly means.
And by the way, it's not even like that's the thing that they're going to do for the rest of their lives. It's, you know, like I remember you know, taking classes where I learned how to build things. And that skill had led me to things like in my first house, I put in my own hardwood floors. In my first house, I put in the whole PVC system for the sprinkler system in the house, right? 12-valve system. I did it all myself because I can walk into a Home Depot, look at a wall that looks like nothing makes sense, and then an hour later it makes sense because I know the process of how to do something like that, right? And that's really what you want to teach kids, is that process of how do you figure stuff out, how does it work, what's the problem solving components that you need to go through to fix whatever it is that you're working on.
Well, and sometimes it's an issue of just access, right? Like, what are we allowing our kids access to? So with my current school, like, they basically hired me to build a makerspace. They're like, we want kids to be able to create, and we don't know how to do it. You know how to do it, so do it. I'm like, cool. Like, these are the things that I need to make this happen. And, I mean, I have high school seniors, boys and girls coming down, that have never used the power drill in their life. That have, like, never used. They're like, I handed it to them. They look at me like, what are you, I don't know. What? How do I make this work? And I'm just like, oh, dear. Right. But when their parents come and visit, and I tell them these stories, they're just like, thank you. Like, this is what is missing. Like, I remember my shop class. I remember those are the things that I learned that, like you said, they lead to other bits of learning. They lead to knowledge, or, oh, I know how a drill works, so I can just build that box myself. I don't got to spend $50. I'm like, that's just five pieces of wood. Okay.
This is why my 4-year-old is my assistant on any house project that I do. And it's not, you know, look, you're not making your life any easier bringing a 4-year-old around with nails and drills and hammers and right. But she's learning the process of identifying the problem and solving it using tools.
It's exactly, you know, what my dad did growing up. He had his little workshop. He had all of his tools around, and you just go like hang around. He'd let you just hang around, and he built a pond in the backyard 1 year. And when I became an adult and owned my own house, I woke up one day, I was like, I think I can build a pond in my backyard. And I did a quick YouTube search. I was like, oh, that's exactly what he did. And then I built a pond in my backyard, and it was, you know, that idea of modeling, right? The idea of showing how to do things instead of just hoping Amazon we'll just send you whatever it is that you need really quickly.
Right. And now I think now we live in a time where learning can happen faster than any time in history, right? That you don't have to have your father teach you. That's great. And it's great if you do it in person and that's live and that's there. But if you just have a curiosity about something, if you want to know how something works, we have all the world's information at our fingertips, or a lot of the information of world's information. And so we can learn lots of really cool things in lots of different ways. And that's what I'm excited about.
Well, yeah. And I mean, 9 times out of 10, if I ask a student where they learn to do that, they say YouTube. Like, that is just the answer. My niece quit going to piano practice and has just been watching YouTube and teaching herself piano because she's like, well, I can just do it whenever I want. And then I just have my finger placement and it's fine. And I'm like, yeah, and you're saving a ridiculous amount of money.
Here's the thing, and she might not realize this, but she's finding a connection with whatever that lesson is, because there's 1,000 people that'll teach you piano lessons online, but for some reason there's one video that somehow she connects with, because maybe they talk a certain way, or they use certain verbiage, or they use certain analogies. I mean, these little things that you don't even think about that matter in the process of learning, that she's picking up on without even knowing. And that's why she watches this video versus the other 900 videos. So it's not just wisdom of crowds. It's something that connects on a personal level.
Exactly. And I think what that does, I think, for educators, for people that go out and share these stories, is that it offers them an opportunity to sort of view what education become from a different light, and have to be okay with, you know, it not being your, you know, grandparents' education or even your education. Like, there has to be an okay feeling with that. And one of the things that you've sort of started with your YouTube channel is sharing like these big things that you feel like, you know, people need to know, that kids need to know. Do you want to explain a little bit more about what made you start this? Because you've been on the internet for a while, but you've only just started this YouTube channel. So what drove you to do this?
I knew nothing about YouTube. And as a matter of fact, it all started with a friend of mine that I'm actually visiting in Flagstaff tomorrow. But he's like, you're not doing enough to get your message out. And I almost kicked him out of my office because I'm like, what are you talking about? I travel 300,000 miles a year. He's like, nope, you can do more. And so it was his idea, but I'm like, I don't know anything about YouTube or how to shoot film or how to video or how to edit any of those things. As a matter of fact, my daughter, my oldest daughter, has a degree in film production. And I went to her when I'm like, when I decided, okay, I know how to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to have these ideas out there. I'm going to talk about things that I care about, right? I'm going to like changing mindsets, showing a different perspective on things, giving advice to young people who are either in high school, college, or just starting their careers. And I'm going to do it while I'm traveling to wherever I'm traveling so I can make it interesting and exciting. And so I went to her and I said, hey, tell me the first thing I need to know. And this is why, you know, you were talking earlier about teachers and changing the mindset. I think teachers are more important in this world because I went to her and I said, what's the first thing I need to know? Because teachers are the guardians of creation. Where is the information? Where's the lesson? What's the next thing I need to learn? Right. And so I said to her, what do I need to know? What's the first thing I need to know? And she said, okay, look, you don't need to shoot in 4K, just shoot in 1080, shoot at 24 frames per second, keep your ISO at 100, which means if you are going to go outside and record anything, you're going to need an ND filter, but you should get a variable ND filter, so you should have that with you at all times. And I said, cool, thank you so much for all that information. What do any of those words mean? I knew nothing about this, right? But because of, to your point of YouTube, and because there's lessons out there, because there's so many people out there that are trying and sharing and doing these things, I've learned how to do this. And so the whole point of the YouTube channel is to take all that information that's inside my head that I've learned over the last 25 years or even 50 years of growing up where I grew up and, you know, how I was able to succeed in my life, how I've been able to be at Google for the last 13 years, how I travel, all those things, to talk about things like, you know, what problem is it that you want to solve, or, you know, don't do what you love, do what you're passionate about, or, you know, understanding that you need perspective. It's not just following the crowd, that in this world, in the future, you need to have your point of view or your perspective. And so I'm creating these videos and sharing them, and they're terrible right now, but I hope to get better at it, and I'm getting better at filming, and I'm terrible at editing, and I'm hoping to get better at editing, and so it's this community I'm trying to build around sharing some of these ideas, sharing of these best practices. As a matter of fact, the video I'm creating right, the editing right now, the video I'm editing right now is all about how to communicate and reach out to people on LinkedIn, because I just got too frustrated with the types of messages that I have. So I'm gonna tell people what kind of messages are terrible and how they should craft their messages to reach out to people to connect with them. Because what you often hear from young people is like, I reached out to those people. They never talked back to me, or they never reached back. They're arrogant. And it's not them, it's you. So I'm gonna create this video to show them what they should do to reach out to people, connect with people, to network with people.
So, some of those emails you've shared are just the funniest things. I'm like, oh, this makes my day today, because you get those. And sometimes I'll get those. I legitimately just got an email saying that they love my website and they think they have the perfect business opportunity for New York, a magazine that's about New York high-priced condominiums or something like that. I'm just like, so you read my website and you walked away with, I really think this would be a good place to do a whole article on New York penthouses for the rich and famous. I'm like,
yeah, that's funny. I got one today. It's like, on LinkedIn, hey, I read through your profile. I think you're doing some interesting things at Google. I'd love to sit down with you and learn what the Google's education roadmap looks like. Sure, let me call you right up and give you all that. So some lessons in there.
And are these videos just for adults? Are they for kids? Are these for kids?
No, these adults are for any. I haven't narrowed down what the audience is. The way I think about it right now are high school kids, college kids, educators that work with students, young people that are just starting their careers. But here's the thing, I think right now it's for those that are kind of in college or starting their career. But then I look at high school kids and the things that they're doing today. And, you know, we often talk about how, you know, 50 is the new 30, right? You hear that? It's usually from somebody who's 50. I think that you know, 16 is the new 35. And the level of maturity of these kids and the things that they're bringing to the table, you know, that girl Gretchen from Sweden, who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, right? Like if she wins, two teenagers will win the Nobel Peace Prize in the last 5 years, right? So young people, like, you know, how young will people be when they start solving problems, right? And, you know, you go through the Google Science Fair and look at all those winners, and they're 14, 15, 16 years old coming up with million-billion-dollar product ideas, right? So I think that this is for anyone who wants advice on how to succeed in life and in your career.
Well, and I think you pointing out those teenagers and the amazing things they're doing, again, it all goes to the idea of, you know, we have access to all this information, you know, as adults, you know, it's criminal to keep it away from the kids or just have the kids fill in the little bubbles every single year instead of giving them opportunity to have access to the information, because there are so many amazing ideas that get lost, you know, when they're tested out of a kid for a full week. So,
well, we also have to teach them, right? We have to teach them how to use these tools. We can't, I'm actually, one of the videos, I don't know if it's in the pot to edit, is around this idea of digital skills for students and how we give them a pass, right? We call them digital natives. We call them, they're born with technology, know how to use these tools, and nothing's further from the truth. We actually have to teach them how to use these tools. So instead of keeping it away from them, let's teach them how to use it, so that it can empower them in what they're interested in and the problems that they're interested in solving.
I have kids who can't attach files to email. When I ask them to, oh, well, download your 3D design, attach it to an email and send it to me. And they look at me like, I don't know what. He's like, can I just send you a link? No, I need the file. Like, download the file. And they go, oh. And I'm like, okay, here, I have a second. And they go, oh, you just click and drag. I'm like, you should have just said that.
No.
Even the terminology. No,
we got to teach them how to use these tools. I think that to me is the missing area where we have so much potential. We have so much information out there that we can take advantage of. And a generation of kids who don't know how to do anything but be online. How do we combine those things? How do we teach them how to use these tools, given the skills that they have, to solve the problems that they're interested in solving? I think that to me is what I want to focus on.
Well, where can people go to find your YouTube channel? How could they search you, or what's the best way to do that?
So first of all, you can always find me on Twitter, and anybody who wants to reach out, my message button is open. So you can always hit me up on Twitter at jcasap, J-C-A-S-A-P. And then my YouTube channel is just youtube.com/JamieCasap, J-A-I-M-E-C-A-S-A-P. It's linked in my bio on Instagram and Twitter. I'm trying to get the message out there, because, you know, it's one thing for someone to say, just follow me on Twitter, because you're not actually doing any work. Yeah. But when you're getting people to subscribe to your YouTube channel, you're like, please, you don't know how much time and effort go into this.
No, absolutely. And don't forget, people can always find you on LinkedIn, right?
Yes. And then you can find me on LinkedIn and send me a message, and I'll tell you all the secrets that you want to know.
Well, Jamie, I really appreciate you taking the time. You are one of the busiest, constantly in the air somewhere men that I know. But you've been working really hard to get really great, really important messages across everyone out there. So I really appreciate you taking the time. Any final thoughts for anyone on being creative or teachers and how to engage students with creativity?
Yeah. So this is my last thought, is never, ever say when someone says, are you creative? Never say, no, I'm not the creative type. Right? Like, that's a mindset. Got to change that mindset. And if someone says, do you know how to do something? Don't say, I don't know how to do it. Say, I just haven't learned how to do it yet.
Nice. That's a little throwback to the West Wing. Jed Bartlett would say that. I love that.
Yes.
Everyone, thank you so much for tuning into the Maker Mentality. I'm really excited to have had Jamie here and share these great ideas with all of you. Definitely go and check out his Twitter, his Instagram, his YouTube channel. Obviously, subscribe, share it out. Pay attention to my Twitter feed as well, because I'll be sharing out every time I see a new video pop up on my screen. It's always a great watch to share with my teacher community as well. So until the next episode, thank you, Jamie, very much for coming out, and I will talk to everyone later.
Thank you.
Welcome to Season 2 of The Maker Mentality. This season, we are going to be focusing on creativity. If you want to find more information, you can always check out my website, thenerdyteacher.com, or find me on Twitter or Instagram at the Nerdy Teacher.